Try not to have a collision up here. So, I think it was Thursday. Days kind of start running together, but I'm pretty sure this was Thursday. I had plans all day of going out for a run. You know, I've talked about that in here before, that I love to run. I don't love it as much since moving here because I can't breathe while I run. And I gained a few extra pounds in the moving process, and I feel those every time I go run. So I'm not loving it as much, but I still love to get out and run. And I had plans all day on Thursday to go out and run. And then this nice tropical storm moved through. We didn't have storms like that in Casper, Wyoming. We had them like that in Kansas, but this storm just poured in. And I was sitting out there, and I was looking, and we had a limited amount of time, and I finally decided, I don't know, some of you might remember what storm I'm talking about on Thursday, because you're thinking through, okay, which one was that, because there's a lot of them out here, which is awesome. Like, that's one of the things Sarah and I were talking about that we were looking forward to, was the thunderstorms again. We missed those. But this one was a downpour. Like, we were standing in our garage, because Keely got a kitten this week. I'm still not sure if I regret that decision or not. It's an outdoor cat, but they were out there with the kitten, and the storm just starts pouring in. So we're in the garage, and all of a sudden, the water starts, like, flooding up through the floor drain in the garage, which Judah loved. He's like, oh, there's a puddle in my garage. And so he's running back and forth through, and he's having a great time. And I'm sitting here with this debate inside my mind, like, do I still go for a run? Like, this is downpour city going on out here. And I decided, you know what? Clothes dry. I don't see any lightning. I hear some thunder. That's fine. And so I went for a run, and here's kind of how it went. Like, I've gone for runs in the rain before, and, you know, I love doing it. It's actually kind of fun. But, like, the first half mile was the fastest half mile I've had since I moved here. And I think it's because I wasn't just drenched in sweat. I was drenched in water instead. I could actually breathe, had my hat on, so it was blocking some of the water from hitting me in the face. But I'm out there in the first half mile, fastest half mile I've done. Second half mile was slowing down a little bit. And then by, like, mile two, like, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the time on my watch and what my pace is like. I'm like, what is going on? And it hit me. I weigh like 20 pounds more right now than I did when I started this run. Like, of course I'm struggling and my time is slowing down. Every intersection that I come to, there's a puddle that I'm running through, and my shoes are drenched, my socks are drenched. I think my shoes are still drying out, and that's been several days now, because there's also this thing called humidity here, so things don't dry out as well as they didn't. Like, Casper, you get something wet, and 5 minutes later, it's dry. Like, it's fine. It's like, just sucks that water right out of whatever it is that you have. But as I started thinking about that, and I started thinking, so I didn't make it to my full 5K that I had planned on that day. I didn't make it to the 3.1. I was really beating myself up. I made it to 1.7 miles, and then I was like, forget this, I'm done. And I turned off, and as soon as I ended, I was like, what am I doing? I had 0.4 miles left to go. Like, I could have finished that out. But as I stopped and I thought about that, I thought, man, what a great representation about how some people feel about the year 2020 that we are in right now. Like, we started off 2020, and it felt pretty decent for January and February here in the States. You know, we heard about this thing that was going on overseas, this little sickness that was going on overseas. But if we're being honest, in America, if it's not here, we tend to not care. Like, we just sit there and, like, you know what? By the time it hits the United States, we'll have it figured out. It's fine. Like, we almost have this little bit of, I'm going to call it arrogance. We have this little bit of arrogance, like, we'll take care of it before it gets to us. So January and February, you know, they weren't too bad. March started to hit, and things started to change a little bit. Things started to get, you know, people were starting to get a little bit worried about this thing because it was starting to creep into the Washington area. And sometime in there, Kobe Bryant died, and a lot of people mourned big time for Kobe Bryant when he passed. And then COVID really started to hit, and things started to shut down. And it's like this year that we're like running out. We're like, this is a great year. Kind of started to feel a little bit waterlogged. And then the lockdowns really started. And people, myself included, started to get a little bit antsy, started to get a little bit worried, started, you know, the jokes started coming out about 2020, what a great year, can't wait for it to get over. And then, you know, we had these things that everyone started freaking out about for a little bit called murder hornets that turns out maybe weren't as big of a deal as everyone thought they were, but, you know, hey, if we can freak out over something, let's do it. So we freaked out over those for a little bit, and then as we're still in some lockdowns and protests begin to start happening about lockdowns, then George Floyd was killed by a police officer, and racial unrest exploded in our country. You know, years and years of this unrest just started coming and boiling to the surface to where it could not be ignored anymore. And I looked at a calendar that somebody had put of their youth year that they had planned, their youth ministry year. They put it in a group that I'm in on Facebook. And they just said, is anybody else's year kind of look like this? And you look at it and it's like January, February, not too bad, but really cold, you know, and it's got their events written on there. And then March, it's like COVID hit with a big old X through every event that they have. And then it's April, couldn't leave the house, big old X through everything that they had. Zoom youth with a big old thumbs down. And Zoom youth was not easy, just throwing that out there. I'm not going to say it was miserable because we were still in contact with youth, but it was not what I was looking forward to. And then, you know, he gets to March and he starts putting all the stuff in March. And finally, you know, there's the school's canceled and everybody's sent home and sports are being canceled left and right and activities are being canceled left and right. And he finally gets to like September on there, and it's this 4-month period where he's got plans on it. And then on every month, it just has a big question mark, like, are we going to do anything? Are we going to do anything? Are we going to do anything? And that's really how people are starting to feel about the year 2020. And we kind of have this feeling of, let's just get through this. I mean, I know I was we never went on full lockdown. I've shared that with you guys. But I know there were days during we weren't on lockdown, but most things were closed. There were no restaurants you could go to. There were no movies, anything like that. We closed our church offices. And so I was at home and I was antsy. Like yesterday morning, we slept in, and so I didn't get up until 8:15. And by 8:45, Sarah was saying, "Why are you so antsy today?" Because I don't sit still. Like I want to be moving, and you can't really do that under lockdown. And there were a lot of people feeling that way, and a lot of struggles going on. And so with everything else, this song really it popped into my head yesterday. As I was thinking about 2020 and I was thinking about what we're getting ready to talk about, I feel like there is a country song that came out years ago that really kind of captures 2020. Now, it doesn't actually talk about a year or anything like that. Just for the record, I despised country music until I started dating my wife. Well, obviously she wasn't my wife at that point, but I loved her. I still do. And because of the love for her, I put country music on the dial in my car, and I found out there are a couple bands that are worth listening to. Most of them aren't, but a couple of bands are worth listening to, and this is one of those bands. So I asked the band to kind of play through this morning, which was really incredible, because I was like, you know, we'll play a verse and a chorus, and then that'll probably be it. And we got done with that much, and we're all like, no, let's keep going. That was kind of fun. So this, now you can replace some of the lines with things like COVID or whatever you want to put in there, rough things that have happened. You can replace them with that. He's not actually singing about that stuff, but I think you'll get the gist of this as we're going through here.
Well, I was sitting on a bar stool in a barbecue joint in Tennessee, when this old boy walked in and he sat right down next to me. Well, I could tell he'd been through some hard times. There were tear stains on his old shirt. And he said, "You want to know what you get when you play a country song or 2020 backwards? You get your house back, you get your dog back, you get your best friend Jack back, you get your truck back, you get your hair back, you get your first and second wives back, your front porch swing, your pretty little thing, your bling, 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 and a diamond ring, you get your farm and the barn and the boat and the Harley, your first night in jail with Charlie. It sounds a little crazy, a little scattered and absurd, but that's what you get when you play a country song backward. Well, I never heard it said quite like that. It hit me in the face, 'cause that's where I'm at. I almost fell flat out on the floor. He said, wait a minute, that's not all, there's even more. You get your mind back, you get your nerves back, you get your first heart attack back, you get your pride back, you get your life back, you get your first real love back, you get your big screen TV, a DVD and a washing machine, you get the pot and the lawn and the bale and the mower. You go back where you don't know her. It sounds a little crazy, a little scattered and absurd, but that's what you get when you play a country song backwards.
And I think that's why I hated country music so much. Like, every song was, oh, my dog died, and my life is so rough. And they never sang about cats dying, because that'd actually be a fun song. But they, I got an amen. That's what I was going for. But, you know, my girlfriend left me, my wife left me. She threw all my stuff out the door, and, you know, my tractor broke down, and my car broke down, my Harley, you know, it's over there on the side of the road. And that was country music. It was like this real sad, like, bleh, stuff. And then Brad Paisley came along, and it actually started getting good and started getting fun. And, that's why I didn't like it. And I think that's why people are struggling with 2020, is because there's so many things that we look at this year that were like, this isn't going the way we planned it. What if we could just rewind it? What if we could just start 2020 over? And here's the truth. We can't. We can't start any of it over. We can't go back and redo any of it. What has happened has happened. So we can sit and we can lament everything that's going on, or maybe we can take a little bit of a different approach. As many of you know, a couple of weeks ago, I went home to my grandma's funeral. She passed in March, so that's actually a little bit of a praise. Like, she passed before all of this started going crazy. And so at 94 or 96, I can't remember which one, how old she was. Do you remember how old she was, Sarah? No, I didn't think so. But 94 or 96, something like that. It was kind of a relief as the year kept going on and things started happening that she didn't have to live through all of that. But because of COVID things, we had her memorial service all planned in April, and then we had to postpone it, and so we were finally able to have her memorial service a couple of weeks ago. And it was a pretty big celebration. I think Ben was asking me last night, so how did it go when you went back? And it was a good time of family being together because of the woman that we were able to remember in all of that. My grandma was a pastor's wife for 60-ish years before my grandpa, before he died 12 years ago. And throughout their ministry, they were, you know, obviously I wasn't around them for a lot of their ministry. I lived a half a mile away from them for the 18 years that I lived in Waukene, Kansas. And then every time I'd go home, they still lived half a mile away from my parents. But, you know, through what I saw and all the stories I heard, like, they had a home that was just always open. That my grandpa was one of those that he would meet somebody, and in the course of the conversation, he would invite random person who he's never met before in his life, hey, why don't you come over for dinner? And my grandma was one of those that she's like, well, yeah, that's what God has for us. Let's do this. And she, you know, she was an amazing cook. Apple pies, fried chicken, none of the healthy stuff. Like, kale never entered my grandma's house. It was fantastic. But you went to grandma's and you knew that you were going to eat well. And grandma was one of those people that when you would go out to the farm with grandpa, she'd pack your lunch for you, and she'd have your name on top of your lunchbox, and she'd put in all of your favorite things or what she thought were your favorite things. The more we sat around and talked, we learned just how many people didn't have their favorite things in their lunchbox that she thought were their favorite things, because one time someone mentioned that somebody else liked it, and so she attributed that to you. So there were some things like that. But just an incredibly loving, caring woman who had really embraced the, like, this is not my husband's ministry, but we are a ministry team. This is what God has called us to. And in all the things that they did, you saw this. There was actually a conversation I had with my dad years ago. I think it was probably 5, 6, 10 years, I don't know how long, before my grandpa died. My grandparents decided that they were going to reopen an oil well that they had on some land, and it struck some oil. And so all of a sudden, at a point in their life where they had very, very minimal income, God blessed them with this oil money coming in. And they were the type that if you went to eat with them, it didn't matter if you were family or not, if you went to eat with them, they were buying your meal. Because they were just all about giving whatever God had given to them. And so at one point, my grandpa was kind of talking before he died about, well, you know, maybe we should sell the well. It had broken down several times. And I don't know how much you know about oil and wells and all that kind of stuff. But when they break down, they're not like a car repair where it's a couple hundred. It's like thousands of dollars. And so they're always having to make sure they keep some aside for whatever repair they have to do. And he just started talking about maybe we need to sell this. And I remember my dad telling me at one point as they were thinking about this and a conversation that he and I were having, he said, "My only concern is that if they sell the well and they sell all those rights, I won't have an inheritance because they will give it all away." And he said that with a caveat of, I know that sounds selfish and I know that that sounds greedy and obviously I want my parents to do with their stuff what they want to do with their stuff. But that was in the back of his mind because that was the type of people that he knew his parents were. I actually just texted him a couple days ago just kind of making sure that I remembered that conversation correctly, and he doesn't really remember that conversation, but he did say, like, yeah, that sounds like something that they would have done, so I probably did say something like that. That's not to paint my dad in a bad light. I think a lot of us would be there in that same situation, like, well, I want my parents to do what my parents want to do and what they feel like they're supposed to do, but it would be nice to be able to pay their bills when the time comes. So, Dad, if you watch this, I'm not throwing you under the bus. I'm just telling a story. Get closer to the end of my grandma's life, and I think it was about 12 years ago that my grandpa passed. And, I mean, they were married for 60-plus years. And all of a sudden, she loses the person that she has been with almost every single day for the past 60 years. And she became pretty honest over the last 12 years, like, I'm just ready to go. I don't understand why God has me here still. And as she got older, and as her body broke down more, I never knew my grandma as a tall woman. I don't think she ever was. I think at her max, she might have hit my shoulder. But by the time she died, she was significantly shorter than my shoulder because she couldn't stand up anymore, and she was in constant pain. But in the midst of that constant pain, I'd heard her make the statement, and other people heard it too, that she's just ready to go. And she would make the statement, I don't know why God still has me here, but there must be a reason for it. And so she would keep pushing on. But there was another statement that she would make over and over again in the midst of that. And if you would go and you would talk to her, she would say, this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I mean, you think about it, this is a woman who is hunched over in pain and can't stand up. I think that it has something to do with all the time that she used to spend in a garden hunched. Like, you would drive by grandma and grandpa's, and what you typically saw was grandma out in the garden bending over, pulling weeds. I think that probably attributed to it. But she constantly would make this statement. She wouldn't complain. She'd let you know, like, I don't know why I'm still here, but there's obviously a reason. Not complaining about the pain. Maybe my dad, maybe my aunts, maybe they heard a complaint every now and then, but I never did. I had an uncle that some in here might know. I know Winnie Berry would know him really well because she's related to him. But I had an uncle by the name of Martin Shackleton that if you knew him when he was my age and up through like his 50s or I don't know how old for sure, because I never bothered to ask him his age. It's just not something you usually ask your aunts and uncles. But he was a big, tall, strong man who loved to go out and play golf and who loved to play racquetball and had this really strong tenor voice that, you know, he led worship for years and years, and their family would go around and they would tour. And I'm pretty sure at some point, if the whole family didn't sing in this church, that I know my Aunt Jean has been here and she's played in this church. But Uncle Martin was this big, tall man until all of a sudden, and it seemed sudden, he wasn't a big, tall man anymore. because he got some disease that they couldn't figure out what it was, and his body just began to deteriorate. Until near the end, he was a man who was in a wheelchair and who couldn't sit up straight and who couldn't really feed himself and who you couldn't understand what he was saying, and it broke your heart because you knew that his mind was still alive in there, but his body just would not cooperate. But in the moments where I could hear what he said, because we lived in Tulsa and he lived in Oklahoma City, so he was the uncle that I would get to see the most. But in the times where you could understand it, what you would never hear was a complaint. Like, he had so many reasons to complain. I wake up in the morning at 36 years old, and I'm finding that my back is not quite as limber as it used to be when I first wake up. And there's people laughing going, "Oh, you young pup, just wait." I see some of you back there laughing at me right now. But, like, I get up and I go, "Oh," not really loud because I don't want to wake Sarah up if she's still sleeping. But I'm like, "Oh, this isn't comfortable. Like, this doesn't feel good at all." But, man, it can be so much worse. And I never heard them complain about all of it. I had a cousin whose husband, just a few years, if even that, into their marriage, her husband was found to have a brain tumor. And 3 or 4 years later, she lost her husband before having any children, before really getting to experience the life that they planned on. But what I never heard from either one of them was a complaint. Instead, there was the, "God's got a plan in this somewhere. I don't know what it is, but God's got a plan in this somewhere." That's what I heard from all 3 or 4 of those individuals that I'm telling you about. Is I heard this upbeat mentality in the midst of some serious trials and serious storms. I heard them saying what my grandma would say, that this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So what I would like us to do this morning is, I know that there are a lot of struggles that we have had. Some of you have had a lot of struggles this week. Some of you had struggles getting your kids moving or your spouses moving this morning to get here. But the ruches were 10 minutes early this morning. You're here. Regardless of what struggles you had to go through to get here, I know the struggle, not so much lately because I walk across a parking lot to get here, but I know that struggle of getting your children ready so that you can make it to church or you can make it wherever it is that you're going every school morning. You might have had struggles this morning. You might have had struggles this week. You know, kids went back to school this week. The little kids, maybe a little bit more excited about it. You guys right here, maybe not so much. Parents, you know, the drop-off lane or the pickup lane was not as, you know, it was hoped every day because, let's face it, the school is having to figure out some things that they've never had to work through before, which now means that there is an administration at the school who is working through some struggles that they didn't want to have this year. And you can go back and back and keep looking at all these things that pile up. But how often do we stop and just say, you know what, today, in the middle of all of this stuff that we have going on, this is a day that God knew about. This is a day that he made. I didn't make this day. I had nothing to do with the sun coming up this morning. If I had passed in my sleep last night, the sun would have still come up this morning. I am not in control of that. But yet, here it is. This is the day that he made. There is something that I can rejoice in this morning. There is something that I can rejoice in today. Yesterday, I was scrolling through Facebook, which I try not to do, but I was scrolling through Facebook, and I came across my Uncle Greg's post that he put up there yesterday, and we've got that up here for you. It's a beautiful Charlie Brown Peanuts clip. "The world is suddenly crazy," Charlie Brown says, and Snoopy says, "Well, good thing God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He hasn't changed." And because of that, our approach to the things that go on in life, like our attitude that we can have in those, can be different. It is really easy to fall into a pit of despair. And believe me, there were some days during our sort of kind of lockdown, but not really lockdown. There were some days where I didn't talk to any of my friends throughout the day. Like, we've got Marco Polo chats going, and I was just silent. Because I knew if I got on there, I was just going to drag everybody right back down with me. And that wasn't the right approach for me. I mean, we have friends for a reason, and we need to be open with them, and we need to be honest with them, but I was feeling guilty about feeling this way. I was sitting there going, I'm a pastor. Like, I should be able to get over this. Like, I believe that God is who God says he is. I should be able to get past all of this, but I wasn't getting past it, and so I just went silent for the days. But for the most part, I was able to remind myself of that. I was able to remind myself that God isn't surprised by any of this. God isn't sitting there going, wow, man, I wonder what decision the government's going to make tomorrow that's going to make my followers' lives more difficult. He wasn't surprised. He created every day. And for me, at least, that takes pressure off. It's not to say that it makes everything easy and that I can just wake up every morning and I'm like, woohoo, today's a great day. It's awesome outside. I'm not that person. Some people are, and sometimes I wish that I was that person. But I can remember that I don't have to make, every decision I make today is not going to drastically change the world. The world is not on my shoulders, and the world is not my responsibility. Do my decisions matter? Absolutely. But do they matter that much that if I make the wrong one, everything is, no, probably not. There's a few other verses that I would like us to look at today. Matthew 6, verse 11. Jesus reminds us in the middle of what we call the Lord's Prayer, that as we're talking to God, as we're talking to our Father, he reminds us that God is the one who provides us with our needs in the first place. He says, give us this day our daily bread. Not, hey God, today I'm going to take care of all of this. Today, don't worry, take the day off, I've got this, I'll make sure everything's okay. It's no, you can go to your Father and you can say, God, today I need you to give me my daily bread. I need you to show me what I need to do. I need you to give me what I need to have because I can't do that on my own. You know, I'm not a big fan of the word can't. But there are times where it's important to use it, and one of those is to admit that there are things we just can't do because they are out of our power. We are human beings who cannot do everything, but we have a Father who can. And that's the one that we are told that we can actually ask him to do those things for us. And again, in Matthew 6, in verse 34, Jesus instructs us, he says, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring its own worries. Like, if you take today's worries and you compound them with tomorrow's worries and next month's worries, you might as well just give up. Like, don't worry about tomorrow, because it's going to bring its own. Today's trouble is enough for today. And I think that's something that we fall into a trap of really easy, is that we start thinking, well, I mean, look what's happened in 2020 so far. Look what happened. Maybe your 2019 was actually worse than your 2020. And everyone else is talking about 2020. But you're like, no, like, my 2019 was actually really bad. And I need to be able to talk about that. But you feel guilty about talking about that because everybody else is feeling bad about 2020. And you don't want to downplay what's hard for them. So you can't talk about what's hard for you. And you don't, anyway. He says, don't worry about those things. Today has enough trouble of its own. And I'm here in the midst of that trouble today to give you your daily bread, to help you through the things that you need help through today. In Luke 12 and verse 25, Jesus again says, can all your worries add a single moment to your life? And if worry can't accomplish a little thing like that, what's the use of worrying about bigger things? Like, is the worry going to help? Is the concern going to help? Is the woe is me going to help? It sounds insensitive, and I understand that, and it's a lot easier to say than it is to do, and I understand that too, but we know that it doesn't really help. Now, I'm not telling you, like, hey, there is no responsibility that is put on you. Like, just throw it all on God and say, God, today I'm going to lay in bed and let you fix my life. No, God's going to say, oh, hold on, like, when I give you bread to eat, like, you have to actually put it in your mouth and eat it. I'm not going to, I mean, he could, he is God, so I guess he could just Like the bread could lift up off the table and start coming at you, but most likely you are gonna flip out and you are gonna move away from your house. I know in the horror movies, they just stay and, you know, when things are floating in their house, they're like, oh, this'll be fine. No, in real life, like if my bread starts floating across the table, I'm like, Sarah, we're out. Either there are way too many ants in this house or there's something going on and so we're gone. He could do that, but he doesn't. Instead, he says, hey, there's still some responsibility for you, but I'm gonna walk you through that. I don't know about you, but to me, that is an incredible relief. That, to me, like, that's a message that I'm here, that I hear, and I'm like, okay, I can breathe. I can breathe. Like, in the worst of times, you know, when Judah was born, and he wasn't sleeping for anything, and we were wondering if it was ever going to end, like, I could find different reasons to breathe. And one of those was that I knew that we would get past it, and I believe that God used other people to remind us that you will get past this. There will be a day, maybe, when he's 18, that he moves out and you can sleep again. Then again, my girls are about to become teenagers, so sleeping might not happen again for a long time. But yeah, there's another statement that my grandma would make that I think came out of this one. And here's why this statement, that this is the day the Lord has made, let us rejoice and be glad. This is why I hang on that statement. It's because as a result of that, my grandma could always make the statement of, you'd ask her, how you doing today, grandma? And she'd say, I'm doing pretty good for the shape that I'm in. Like it wasn't I'm 94 years old and I'm out here doing a jig. Like, nope, not doing that. But for the shape that I'm in, I'm doing pretty good. Like, I could sit here and I could lament and I could just, you know, I could walk you through a list of, well, this hurts and this hurts and this hurts and this hurts and so-and-so did this and I can't believe that, you know, this politician made this decision. Although we did have those conversations from time to time. But, you know, I could walk you through all the things that are hard in my life. I could walk you through all these things. Or, and I believe that this wasn't one of those, like, when someone asks you how you do, and you say, hey, I'm good, and really deep down inside, you're like, I'm dying inside. But because nobody wants to hear that when they ask that question, you say, good. Hopefully, we can be a people that when we ask somebody, hey, how you doing, we actually want their true answer, and not the, please just give me the quick little good or fine so that we can keep walking type of a thing. But I believe that Grandma meant it when she said, I'm doing pretty good for the shape that I'm in. Now, we could sit and we could ask her more questions, and she would be honest with us, and she would tell us, well, you know, yeah, this hurts. And I don't like that this happened over here, and, you know, I wish that, you know, I had a few conversations with her that I wish we sang more hymns in church, and, you know, we would have some of those conversations. That was one of the areas that Grandma and I didn't agree on, and it was okay. Now, don't hear that as like I hate hymns. That's not what I was getting across with that statement at all. But we would have some conversations about things that weren't good. But her mentality, because she reminded herself every day that this is a day that God made, and because of that, I have reasons to rejoice, her first thought about how she was doing was not all the bad things. Her first thought was, these are some good things that are going on in my life. This is why things aren't as bad as they might appear on the outside. In 2 Corinthians verse 12, verses 9 through 10, and I know I'm hitting some of these kind of fast. If you have a pen and paper and you want to write these down so that you can look over them later, that's awesome. If you're like, I wanted to know what verses he talked about up there so I could look at them later in the week, but you didn't get them written down, you can always email, call. We will let you know for sure. But in 2 Corinthians, chapter 12, verses 9 and 10, my page just moved on me, there we go. It says, each time, so Paul, just to give you a little background, Paul is like begging, like, I've got this thorn in my side, we don't know what that is, but he's got something that is not good in his life, something that is painful in his life, and he's begged God to take it away. And each time God answers him, my grace is all you need, my power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. That's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses. Imagine having this mindset every day, how much that would change. I take pleasure in my weaknesses, in the insults, in the hardships, in the persecutions, in the troubles that I suffer for Christ, I take pleasure in those. That just sounds wrong. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Because when we are weak, that is when God can do his biggest works, or when at least we admit that we are weak. So when we're going through that day and we're having our struggles, man, it's crazy to find the ways that God can work in the midst of those struggles or because of those struggles. We just had kidsmen training this past week, and we rolled out a new covenant that they're signing and everything. And one of the things we mentioned on there is we're talking about substance abuse and things like that, is that we recognize that some people have had this in their past, and that's not a, you can't serve kids because you made a mistake in your past. It's a, God, you don't have any idea, possibly, how God is going to use that mistake, that weakness in your past, in order to reach this next generation. God can do amazing and awesome things in your weakness, in your failure. God can take that and do something incredible. Now, that's not the excuse to just be like, well, I'm going to do whatever I want because God will do something good with it later. No, obviously, that's not what we do. But he says, I am made stronger in your weakness when you remember that today is the day that I made, not the day that you made, then we can get some serious stuff done. Philippians 4, verses 11 through 13, there's so many. I know we're hitting a lot of them, and normally I don't do that, where we're bouncing all over, but I think it's good to see all these reminders of these promises that God is making to us. In chapter 4, starting in verse 11, says, not that I was ever in need, for I have learned how to be content with whatever I have. And I think that's what my grandma was. She was content with where she was. She wasn't just sitting there going, I want more, I want more. She was saying, absolutely, I just want to die because I want to be with Dwight, my grandpa. I want to be with him. I want to be with Jesus. But while I'm here, I'm not just going to sit here going, God, fix everything and God, give me more or anything like that. I'm going to be content with what he's given me. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. Verse 12, I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. And we love to look at that one. We love to look at verse 13 and say, I can do everything through Christ. And I love to remind my students that he's not actually telling you that you can do everything if you just believe in him. I've told many students over the years, and it felt hard. I didn't like single them out and be like, it's not happening for you. But I tell them, you know what? You might believe in God, but that doesn't mean the NBA is in your future just because you believe in God. You might believe in God, but are you going to go test him by going and jumping off a roof? Like, no, he's not telling you you can literally do everything. He's telling you you can do all the things that I'm going to have on your plate, that are going to fall on your plate. You can do all those with my strength. If you remember that today is a day that I have made, not you, not the day that you have to control, don't worry, I've got this, put your trust in me, and then this is the promise that I have for you. One more that we're going to look at this morning, 1 Timothy chapter 6. Paul writes to his disciple Timothy, he says, yet true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave it. That just, for some reason, that verse just reminds me of my father's statement of, I brought you into this world, and I can take you out of this world. I don't think that's what Paul was getting at here, but that still runs through my mind every single time. Now, God's telling us through Paul, we brought nothing, you brought nothing into this world, and you're not going to take it with you. So if you have enough food and clothing, be content. Don't always be looking for more. Don't always be trying to control everything so that you can have more. Be content. We live in a society, and this is not just America 2020 or America 21st century or the world 21st century. This is humanity going all the way back to the garden. We live in a society that wants more, that is just not content with what we have. We're going to work our tails off so that we can get more stuff, so that we can work our tails off, so that we can get more stuff, and so that we can't really enjoy the stuff, we're just going to work our tails off to buy the stuff instead. Like, that's the mentality that we are taught is correct. And my question would be, if that's where you are and you're listening to this and you're like, yeah, that all sounds good and everything, my question is it working? If you're trying to control it yourself, and you're trying to just pursue all of these things on your own, and you're trying to find happiness on your own, and you're trying to work through 2020 on your own, my question is it working? Are you finding contentment? Are you finding peace? Are you finding long-term joy and happiness? Or, if you look really honestly at it, are you finding that there's just something missing? Like, I'm just not quite there. I don't want to make some promise to you, and I don't want to tell you that, hey, you know, if you will just put it all at God's feet, and you will do that today, and you'll start this with me today, that every single day you're going to wake up with a smile on your face, and you're going to wake up with a song in your heart, and you're going to walk out, and instead of weeds, you're going to see flowers. Like, I'm not telling you that's what it is. Paul wrote about the fact that there were troubles and struggles and persecutions and all of those different things. He never said that, hey, you follow God, you give your life to Christ, and boom, everything's easy. No, he said, I can be content in the midst of all of that. I can have peace in the midst of all of that. That, to me, that sounds better than a lot of the things that I would otherwise pursue, and that sometimes I do start to pursue, and I have to catch myself, like, what am I going for here? It's an incredible promise that we are given, that we can actually walk through this life with peace and contentment, that we can walk through this life with joy, that we can walk through this life reminding ourselves that today is the day the Lord has made, and there is a reason that I can rejoice today. You know, we've started off the past several weeks in our services by, what is something that you can worship God for today? And, you know, at night, we don't always do it, but we always pray with our children before bed, and sometimes we ask them, like, what is something good that happened in your life today? What is something that you are thankful for today? Because it's really easy to get into bedtime prayers and go, God, thank you for the day. Now let me give you my laundry list of things that I want. Amen. Peace out. And then we go lay our heads on the pillow. So we try and remember to ask our daughters, not Judah so much yet, because usually we don't get beyond some toy or poop. That's about as far as we get half the time, which, you know, is something to be thankful for. But we ask them, that my wife's looking at me like, I can't believe you just said that. There's still youth pastor in here. So we ask them that question because we want them to stop throughout the day and ask that question of, what do I have to be thankful for right now? How can I rejoice? How can I show and feel joy? Because that's what the psalmist is writing. Now, there's debate as to which psalmist actually wrote 118 because, well, it's the Bible and it's Christianity, so of course there's debate over it, but there's a debate over whether or not David wrote it, and we know some of the struggles that David went through before he ever would have started writing Psalms. That, you know, he was pursued by the king as the king was trying to kill him because he was going to be the next king, and you obviously you don't want your predecessor to just kick you out. So David went through some hard times. There's some who think that Moses actually wrote Psalm 118, and Moses went through some hard times. You know, after he killed the Egyptian, he had to run, and he lived life on the run, and then he was told to go back and confront the most powerful leader in the area and say, hey, let my people go. We know that's not going to go over well. So he had to go back, and he had to have that conversation. So whether it was David, whether it was Moses, some say it was Ezra, and you can read through some of the things that Ezra went through, like, none of them just had this perfect life. There's conversation as to, you know, this was a song that the disciples actually sung during Passover as they were going out to the garden, and it says that they sang hymns and spiritual songs, that this would have been one of them that they would have sung, and Jesus would have been singing with them, and Jesus knew what was coming, and yet he was still, if that happened, He was still able to say those words. Today is the day that my Father has made, and I'm going to rejoice. Like, I'm going to a cross, but I'm going to rejoice because today is the day that my Father has made. I want to put out a challenge to all of you, and then if the band wants to come back up, we're going to sing one more song. We're going to take a little bit of a remix version of that old children's song that we used to sing of this is the day that the Lord. We actually sang that at my grandma's funeral, which is not something that would be commonly sung at a funeral, and we did it in rounds. So like it was like these people stand up during this part, and this group stood up, and you don't see that at a funeral very often. But we're going to sing a 2008 Lincoln Brewster version of that Psalm 118. But I want to put out a challenge to you guys, to all of you, for the rest of this week, for the rest of this month, for the rest of this year. To every morning or at some point during the day, whatever the best time is for you to actually remember to do it, whether it's you put a reminder in your phone, whether you write something on your mirror, whether you put something in your car, to just say those words. Today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. When you're out there in the harvest field and the machine has broken down for the fifth time in the last week, today is, maybe that was just my experience in the harvest field, I don't know. But today is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. If you're a teacher and you're in there and the students are just like, ugh. Today is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. If you're a student, you say it out loud, you might get made fun of, but that's okay. You can do that anyway. Today is the day the Lord has made. As I'm running around the track in the 130,000 degree heat and the 122% humidity, today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And I'm just wondering how much of a difference it would make for your year, for your week, for your day, if you just stopped and reminded yourself at the beginning of the day or early on in the day that this day is not all on my shoulders. I didn't create this day. I didn't bring the sun up this morning. But my Father did that. And because of that, I can be content with what I have. I can listen for what he would have me do, and I can trust that what that is actually best. And I don't have to figure out all those answers. And I just wonder how much more peace that would put in our hearts. That's my challenge to you this morning, is just remind yourselves that today is the day. This is the day, I guess is how the psalm says it. The song says today is the day. That's why I keep getting those mixed up. But this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. Would you stand with us one last time this morning?